It's a Politics Wednesday edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today joining us, Chris Larimer, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Northern Iowa. He jumped into our Cedar Falls studio. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Ben.
Dave Anderson with us as well. He's in our Ames studio, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Iowa State University. Dave, always glad to have you on the program as well.
Thanks for having me, Ben.
So much to get to, of course. We're just 54 days from Election Day in November, so let's get right to it. Plenty to talk about a little later in the program. Of course, what's hitting the headlines this morning, the newly released emails reportedly hacked from former Secretary of State Colin Powell with some unpleasant things to say about Donald Trump. We'll get to that in a moment. But first, I guess we can call the quote of the week, Hillary Clinton this week having to defend comments she made at the LGBT for Hillary gala in New York City. That was on September 9th, in which she characterized some of Donald Trump's supporters as a basket of deplorables. Here are the first part of her remarks.
You know, to just be grossly generalistic, you could put half of Trump's supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables. Right? The racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic, Islamophobic, you name it. And unfortunately, there are people like that. And he has lifted them up. He has given voice to their websites that used to only have 11,000 people, now have 11 million. He tweets and retweets. They're offensive, hateful, mean-spirited rhetoric.
Hillary Clinton on Friday, September 9th, campaigning yesterday in Clive here in Iowa. Donald Trump reacted to those comments.
Well, my opponent slanders you as deplorable and irredeemable. I call you hardworking American patriots who love your country and want a better future for all of our people. Her comments displayed the same sense of arrogance and entitlement that led her to violate federal law as Secretary of State, hide and delete her emails. I mean, think 33,000 emails. And that's just one batch. It's a lot of wedding talk. It's a lot of wedding talk.
Okay. Clinton walked back her comments, regretting, I guess, the half part of it. Dave Anderson, give us your thoughts on this episode here and how the Trump campaign has tried to capitalize on this. I guess you would agree this is uncharacteristic in the way that Hillary Clinton spoke?
Yes. Usually she's extremely well-scripted. She knows what not to say, and she's very careful about her language. And this is the classic presidential candidate gaffe. Where they speak apparently off the cuff, and it gets recorded, and it's almost a direct mirror to Mitt Romney's 47% comment in the 2012 election. Mm-hmm. And the Trump campaign is quite smartly jumping on it and are using it against Hillary and saying, you know, you as a presidential candidate, you're supposed to govern, well, if you win, you're supposed to govern the entire country and not just the part of the country that you like and voted for you. And I think they're hitting her with it pretty well.
Right. At the same time, Dave, compared to some of the comments that Donald Trump has made about Americans, this is really very, very low on the Richter scale.
It is. It's one of the amazing things about this election cycle is that Donald Trump seems to get away with insulting everybody and saying his own set of deplorable comments, and very little sticks to him. But everything that Hillary says that can be misinterpreted or but if it can be used against her, it seems to stick against her. Mm-hmm. They are very different candidates. He's Teflon, and she is, I don't know, sandpaper. Everything sticks.
Okay, Chris Larimer, how do you see it?
Well, I would agree. I mean, you know, she made the mistake of attacking voters rather than attacking her opponent. And the danger in doing that is obviously what Dave said, is that it presents itself as very easy material for your opponent to use. I mean, and Trump is using it quite extensively. I think the danger, though, is over-interpreting the effect that this is going to have on voters. We know this is still a very polarized electorate, and I think what it does more than anything is just kind of mobilize the base group of supporters for Donald Trump and mobilize the base group of voters for Hillary Clinton. I think there's still a question out there of you know, the extent to which this is going to affect undecided voters, and specifically how many undecided voters are still left out there. There are some studies that show that it's less than, perhaps less than 1%, 3%, 5%. And a lot of those voters lean one way or the other. So, I think there's a danger here in overinterpreting what effect this is going to have on the campaign.
There is the undecided voters, very few of them left. But isn't it really a matter of getting out the vote? There are people out there who perhaps right now don't think they will vote but could be motivated to vote, Chris?
Potentially, but, you know, campaigns are going to be directing a lot of their activities toward partisans, people who are more reliable voters. So that's where they're going to be directing a lot of their efforts. You know, they may be looking to undecided voters, but if you have limited resources, you're going to be more focused on the your own base of support. It's harder to persuade someone. I mean, in the long run for a campaign, it would be great to take away a Trump voter if you're a Clinton supporter and pull them into your camp. But that's much harder to do than just mobilizing your own base of support.
Mm-hmm. Nathan, listening in Des Moines, says he's a strong Bernie Sanders supporter, but comments about Hillary Clinton, he says, are sexist. No other male candidate suffered such scrutiny. That feeds into what you were saying, Dave, perhaps about everything sticking to her. I don't know. Would you say it's because, in part, she's a woman?
I'd say in part. I've said repeatedly over the course of this election that with Hillary Clinton, it is really hard to kind of disentangle what it is about her. She is the first woman candidate for president in our history, and I think that does play against her to some degree. But she's also a Clinton, so we have 30 years of her public record. The people of America feel like they already know who she is, so it's hard to convince them otherwise. There's a lot about her that it just gets bound up together, and it's hard to know what exactly it is about her that people are kind of resonating against.
Join our discussion, Politics Wednesday. We chew over the latest from the campaign trail, 54 days before the general election. Let's talk about Donald Trump on the campaign trail, spending time in Pennsylvania yesterday, where he unveiled his plan to help families with the cost of child care.
We want higher pay, better wages, and a growing economy for everyone. These solutions must update laws passed more than a half a century ago when most women were still not in the labor force. Most of them weren't even close. Today, nearly 2 in 3 mothers with young children have jobs. For many families in our country, child care is now the single largest expense. Who would think that? Even more so than housing. Yet very little meaningful policy work has been done in this area, and my opponent has no child care plan. She never will, and if it ever evolves into a plan, it'll never get done anyway. All talk, no action.
Okay, Donald Trump in Pennsylvania yesterday. We should point out that the last part of Trump's comments asserting that Clinton doesn't have a child care plan is simply untrue. She does, in fact, have a plan. It goes back many, many months, if not years. So let's talk a little bit about these plans, gentlemen. Chris Larimer, how do you compare, this rollout with what Hillary Clinton has stood behind for a while?
Well, I think what most people have said so far is that, Hillary Clinton's plan is more generous and more generous for low-income families. I mean, hers is based on a cap of spending on child care. It's 12 weeks rather than 6 weeks of maternity leave. It allows for both the mother and father to take leave, whereas Trump's plan, as I understand it, is more based on tax credits, certain amounts based on a rebate, and just 6 months of maternity leave for the mother. Or 6 weeks, excuse me, yeah, 6 weeks. 6 weeks of maternity leave for the mother. So I think on the policy benefit side of it, I think Hillary Clinton's plan is still more generous. I think what's fascinating about what Donald Trump was doing yesterday is that he was basically stepping into an issue that is part of the core Democratic Party platform. When you think about what voters identify child care spending and government spending with, they tend to associate that with the Democratic Party and that the Democratic Party is going to be more generous there. And yet you have the Republican nominee, you know, holding events based on that particular issue.
Mm-hmm. And Dave, do you see it the same way? This is a real departure from what the GOP has had to offer in the past in terms of paid family leave.
It really is. It's one of the more interesting things I think Trump has done on the campaign trail. And From a campaign strategy sense, I wish he would have done it a lot sooner, because it really distinguishes himself from other Republican candidates. I don't think you could name another Republican presidential candidate in the last generation who would endorse a plan like this, which can be good as a candidate. You distinguish yourself. You stand out a little. It doesn't seem to really fit in well with the rest of his policy package, what limited we know about it. But I think it's a really good, smart strategy. I think ever since the Republican convention, the kind of professional campaign elites have been expecting Trump to start catering to independents and the groups that he's weak with. And this week, suddenly he's catering towards women. And that is a vital group that he has got to do better with. And the child care plan may get some attention. He's appearing on the Dr. Oz show tomorrow, which is a show that has a huge female demographic. This is what the campaign should have been doing a month ago. I just from a campaign perspective, I'm happy to see it happening now.
With the low number of undecided voters you already mentioned, is he likely to make up for his lack of support among women? I mean, it's a double-digit difference, isn't it, Dave?
It's huge, and he is not likely to make it up. But at some point in a campaign, when you've been consistently behind for the entire course of the campaign, really, you have to start trying. And this is an attempt. I think this is going to be one of the first elections in our history, if not the first election, where a lot of voters go to the poll, and at the poll they may have to decide which of two evils they're going to cast their vote for. I think a lot of people right now are telling pollsters and are telling themselves that they're going to go vote for a third-party candidate. But when they get into the voting booth and they have to make that choice, and they know, because they've been hammered into it, that third-party candidates just aren't winning, and you have to choose one of the two major party candidates, I think people are going to make up that last-minute choice and hold their nose and vote for the lesser of two evils.
Mm-hmm. Back to this child care plan rolled out by Trump, comparing it to Hillary Clinton's plan. I wonder, Chris, if you had an idea of, because there are real differences in how each candidate proposes to pay for this extra perk for families and mothers and fathers.
Right, and Hillary Clinton has talked about it in terms of restructuring the tax code, that there would be increased taxes on the wealthy. We're not really sure exactly how Donald Trump has talked about it. He talks about reforms with unemployment insurance, but I don't think we have a lot of the details yet on how he would pay for it, which is potentially problematic. I think the other dilemma for Donald Trump is that, as you said, we're less than 60 days to the election. I mean, if we look back to September of 2012, a lot of voters had made up their minds by now. So if he's trying to make inroads with voters in the September before the election, there's a potential problem there that he may not have enough time to do it. And I think, as Dave said, there are a lot of voters out there, I think, that are just struggling to come to terms with the fact that they're going to have to vote for someone they don't like and don't trust.
Chris Larimer is with us, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Northern Iowa. Dave Anderson, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Iowa State University. It's Politics Wednesday on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Join our discussion, 1-866-780-9100. Email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Well, let's talk about Hillary Clinton's health incident. Politicians of all stripes have weighed in on it this past weekend. Now, both say they will release more information about their health in the coming days. You mentioned the Dr. Oz show. In fact, we heard this morning in the news that Donald Trump did share results of his most recent medical examination with Dr. Mehmet Oz during the interview that was taped today, not aired today. His campaign had, I guess, previously suggested that his records were not going to be part of the program, the Dr. Oz show. However, the show did not provide more details about the results of his recent exam. So let's talk a little bit about what happened with Hillary Clinton on Friday. She was diagnosed evidently on Friday with pneumonia, but information wasn't made public until a video showed her stumbling, being held up by aides while abruptly leaving a September 11th anniversary ceremony that was in New York on Sunday. She defended the decision to keep this diagnosis secret in an interview with CNN just yesterday, or Monday, I guess it was, and she said she didn't think it was going to be that big a deal. Her people say she's returning to the campaign trail tomorrow. Dave, let me go to you first. Does it surprise you that the campaign was hoping to keep the pneumonia diagnosis out of the public light?
Surprise would be an understatement. It is as if the Clinton campaign is incapable of learning from their previous mistakes. They still keep trying to control information and hide things in ways that just doesn't make much sense. In the modern world, with the flow of information the way it is, and frankly with Russian hackers stealing all of her emails, you have to guess that important information like this is going to come out. You don't very well hide pneumonia. She's got to take a rest. She's going to be coughing on the campaign trail. It's going to raise questions. And why the campaign would not just fully disclose as soon as they know it and just say, hey, you know what? People get sick sometimes. Hillary Clinton, she's been campaigning for 16 months. She has pneumonia. She's going to have to take a few
days off. This is against the backdrop of Trump questioning her stamina to be a candidate, her overall health. I suppose, Chris Larimer, did it make sense in some campaign staff saying, hey, this is something that, you know, we can take care of and people don't have to know about it? Is that a reasonable assumption?
Perhaps for an inexperienced staff, but as Dave said, this is the Hillary Clinton campaign. I mean, they know how these things work, and they essentially made an issue out of a non-issue by trying to keep it secret. So I don't, you know, they essentially started to lend credence to some of Trump's claims by trying to keep it secret. I mean, they created the opposite effect of what they wanted. And so I'm with Dave on this. I absolutely don't understand it, particularly from the Hillary Clinton campaign, a campaign that has been in the works for, you know, decades.
Okay, let's go to our phones, 1-866-780-9100. Karen joining us from Des Moines. Hi, Karen. What do you want to chip in?
Well, I just I'm having a little difficulty with even your opening line about this being a secret. I don't know if the Hillary Clinton campaign has characterized it as a secret or have they characterized it as private.
Well, she was, just to clarify, she was diagnosed on Friday. Her campaign admits that now. It did not come until after she stumbled and was helped into that car on Sunday. So if you do not release information about a pneumonia diagnosis until 2 or 3 days later, isn't that, I guess, a secret?
Well, or private, because
sure,
none of us anticipate that going to the doctor and, you know, we have something done and it doesn't seem like it's going to be a big deal, so do we go back and we tell everybody we know what we just found out at the doctor's office? It becomes later when, you know, you can't perform your job or you have a fainting spell or whatever, then, yes, you tell your employer that this is what you found out when you went to the doctor, and, yes, I should have told you, but, oh, well. And, yes, I know certainly that things are different for the Clintons or for any presidential candidate. However, we don't seem to be too troubled by all of the things that are quote-unquote secret or private in the Trump campaign, whether it's his health, his tax returns, or 100 other things that we don't know about him, and yet she should disclose every time she, you know, sneezes. So I just am a little troubled by the seeming double standard.
Okay, Karen, I've got your point. Dave Anderson, anything to say to Karen's comments? Here we have, you know, most of us, our medical records are private, but these are public figures. So how do you know when to divulge that information?
Well, what I would say to Karen is she's completely right. There is an absolute double standard in this campaign. All the things that Hillary Clinton is being hit for that she isn't disclosing, Donald Trump is also not disclosing. And he maybe has even more reason to be suspicious about that there's a there. In fact, Hillary has released her tax records where Trump has not. So maybe she's doing better than him. However, in a presidential campaign, theories of justice kind of go out the window. Unfortunately, there's intense scrutiny of both candidates usually, and the public expects to know these things. And as a presidential candidate, when you appear as if you're hiding things and you were maintaining this kind of this belief that you have a private life, voters don't like that. As much as presidential candidates and presidents are human beings and people like the rest of us, the public doesn't see it that way. Generally, voters want to know everything about candidates.
And it makes sense, doesn't it? We have no formalized way of accurately testing the medical fitness of candidates for one of the world's most demanding jobs, Chris Larimer. Do we?
No.
I mean, we have lots of jobs where your fitness, mental and physical, is tested, and we think that makes sense.
Right, that's exactly right, and I would agree with Dave and Karen that there is a double standard there. I think it'll be fascinating to see the extent to which that double standard was applied throughout this election cycle. I think that's going to have to wait until after the election. The issue with the Hillary Clinton campaign is they have to work within the reality that's been socially constructed around their campaign, and it's one, the narrative is based on one that she's hard to connect with. You know, she's not as open as she should be. And yes, that should apply to Donald Trump, but it doesn't seem to yet. I think the media, to some extent, are still trying to figure out how to cover Donald Trump because there's so much there to try to cover, and that, you know, where do you pick and choose?
Yeah.
So I think it's just, you know, it's an unfortunate reality if you're in the Clinton campaign that that's the double standard that in which you're operating.
Kelly writing, one of our listeners writing in an email, since pneumonia can be contagious, and missing September 11th ceremonies could have caused an even bigger uproar than being sick. I can see why the Clinton campaign decided to soldier through. So clearly, this is not troubling for Clinton supporters, at least our small sample here. Interesting, and I think Karen from Des Moines raised this issue too. Donald Trump on the Dr. Oz show reacting evidently to pressure about releasing documentation of his health status, but not reacting in the same way to pressure to release his taxes, and he will be the first presidential candidate of a major party not to release his income tax statement for going back decades, Dave Anderson.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing that this isn't a bigger issue, and I think one of the reasons why it's not is that Donald Trump just gives us so much to talk about that some of these, frankly, large issues just get pushed to the sideline. The fact that we don't know the financial well-being or the financial status of a candidate who says one of his chief credentials is that he's fantastically wealthy, is rather astounding. It's as if Hillary Clinton ran and said, well, my main credential is my vast experience in government, but I'm not going to tell you anything that I've done.
Or I'm not going to document. Well, he says what he's done, but we can't document that there's a lot of truth to that.
Right.
In some cases. We want to talk about a little bit more about that in the second half hour. Of course, in past shows, we've had plenty of talk about the Clinton Foundation. Now Donald Trump's foundation is in the news. Yesterday, New York's Attorney General announcing his office was looking into Trump's nonprofit foundation. It's facing intense criticism in light of a political donation it made in support of the Florida Attorney General. We'll talk about that. So much more to talk about. As Dave is saying, it's a little like taking a drink out of a fire hose, but that's what we have here, 54 days before Election Day. We'll try to get to as much as we can this hour. And to your comments, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk. Email us, riverToRiver@iowapublicradio.org. Dave Anderson with us of Iowa State University. Chris Larimer of the University of Northern Iowa. Politics Wednesday on River to River. Stay tuned. And we're back midstream in this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Chris Larimer is with us of the University of Northern Iowa, and Dave Anderson of Iowa State University, our political analysts on this Politics Wednesday. Join our discussion, 1-866-780-9100. Lots to get to, and many of you want to have your say, and we'll do our best in the final half hour of our program. Let's go to this a comment. Dan from Albion writing, I cannot stomach Trump, but when Hillary makes statements such as she did last week, I guess Dan is referring to the basket of deplorables. He says that when she makes statements such as she did last week, I've been more convinced she is not a better choice. Just one more example of many bad decisions she has made, including stupid comments that play to the audience she wants to impress. How is this different from Trump's unfiltered nonsense? Dave Anderson. Also, we have someone there. Dan in Albion doesn't like Clinton, I guess, and doesn't like Trump. So where does that leave that voter?
That is a question that we will solve November 8th. I mean, we really have no models where we can look to the past and say, oh, this is how voters have dealt with this previously. We have never seen two presidential candidates who were so, frankly, despised by the electorate. Donald Trump is breaking all kind of records by having almost two-thirds of the electorate right now saying they're strongly unfavorably disposed towards him. And Hillary Clinton is now pulling in second with about half of the electorate, which means that when people go to vote on November 8th, almost everybody is going to have to vote for somebody they don't like, or a large segment of America is going to vote for people they don't like. It's just a matter of kind of looking at the two candidates and saying, which one do I dislike least?
Okay, you say despise, dislike. Let's talk a little bit about someone who is, at the moment, being seen in a much better light. A Washington Post poll, gentlemen, I think you've probably seen this, released over the weekend. President Obama's approval rating hitting an astounding 58%. Give that some perspective. 15 points higher than it was from the same poll right before the 2014 midterm. As a comparison, I went back and looked this morning. George W. Bush's approval rating in January of 2009 at the end of his second term, 22%. 22%. President Obama at 58%. Well, while Hillary Clinton has been ill, taking a break from the campaign trail, she has had President Obama filling in for her. It was yesterday in Pennsylvania that he stepped onto a stage before a large crowd. Here's what he had to say.
Now, look, can I just say, I am really into electing Hillary Clinton. Like, this is not me going through the motions here. I really, really, really want to elect Hillary Clinton. And sometimes folks, you know, they're kind of surprised by that because they remember, man, you guys had a tough fight 8 years ago. And it was tough because Hillary's tough. Every time I thought I had that race won, I was like going up the rocky steps, you know. I was about to celebrate. And then I look and she's right there. And I got whooped here in Pennsylvania. She whooped me. Now, you didn't make it up to me in November when I won. But I had seen what she could accomplish. I had seen how smart and savvy and tough she was. So I asked her, I said, join my team. And she wasn't sure about it at first. But she ultimately knew that what was at stake was bigger than either of us.
President Obama in Pennsylvania yesterday, the steps, or Rocky Balboa's steps that he was referring to there, obviously relishing being on the campaign trail for Hillary Clinton. Chris Larimer, I wonder, we see President Obama's approval rating rising as he finishes his second term. Can that be transferred to Clinton?
Well, I think the Clinton campaign is certainly hoping so. Because that's a potentially huge boost in terms of their get out the vote effort. I mean, that 58% number is critical for the Clinton campaign. And the fascinating thing is, there's not one thing we can really point to say why Obama's approval rating has been increasing the way it has been. Because some of the policies that he's been pushing have been somewhat controversial. I think it's more of the fact that he's such a contrast with what's going on in the presidential campaign. There was a Pew poll out earlier this week that had 71% of Americans say the presidential campaign is too negative. And so I think when people are asked about President Obama, there may be some reflection going on to thinking back to 2008 when the country was more optimistic in terms of what they were hoping for a president. And so I think President Obama was able to take advantage of that a little bit, of all the negativity around Clinton and Trump. And I think that may be in part driving that approval rating, but it's absolutely critical for the Clinton campaign, and it's very beneficial for their campaign as far as get out the vote efforts. If President Obama's approval ratings stay above 55-56% all the way into November, that potentially is a huge factor for their campaign.
Mm-hmm. And yesterday we had data, a report from the Census Bureau showing the largest single year boost in median household income in nearly half a century, the first annual increase of any kind after inflation since this Great Recession of 2007 through 2009, the largest recorded annual increase since the data series started 1967. So it's interesting. Also, the poverty rate falling in percentage terms. Dave Anderson, when the economy starts to pick up like this, I guess this is working in favor of the Clinton campaign as well.
Absolutely. There are a lot of political science models out there that try to predict the presidential election just by looking at what they call fundamentals. And the top two fundamentals are usually presidential job approval and the state of the economy. And if the party of the presidential candidate, if that president has approval ratings of about 48% or higher, it means that party is likely to win the election again. Mm-hmm. If the economy is doing, if people think the economy is doing better than it used to, generally the party of the president does better. So now Hillary Clinton is looking at a really favorable environment where the two things that might help her candidacy that she has no control over are both pointing in her direction.
Okay.
Yeah, and the fundamentals model that Dave was talking about, the one thing working against her that all the models said sort of favored Trump, though, of course, is that Obama's been in office for two terms. Generally, we like to change presidents and change parties. And so I think what's interesting about the economic data, and the Washington Post had an article today about this, is that people still sort of interpret all that economic data through partisan lens. It just shows how polarized people are, that you still have Republicans looking at the economic data saying, well, the country is still on the wrong track, versus Democrats who maybe are slightly more likely to say the country is on the right track. I think,
or we have Donald Trump's line, which is that the economy is rigged. He had
right.
the attack on, I guess, Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen for keeping interest rates low, saying that that was a political move, right?
Right, exactly. And so people still fall into their partisan camps no matter what data they're looking at. And I think, you know, it just speaks to how polarized the electorate is. And it also speaks to, you know, again, back to the first point of the show about we have to be careful about, you know, over-interpreting or expecting any particular one campaign event to decide the election. I think people are just going to filter all of that through whether or not they're a Democrat or a Republican.
Okay, let's go to a quick call before we talk a little more. We want to talk about the Iowa congressional races, so I'll ask our callers to be brief with their comment or their question. Jim in Dubuque, what do you have for us?
Well, you know, an issue that doesn't seem to be brought up at all, but I think is very significant, is the fact that a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters, Democrats, as well as Trump supporters, are very concerned about the military adventurism that we're going to. And I think that a lot of Bernie supporters are going to go with Trump. I think Trump's going to win in a landslide because the American people are fed up with our causing chaos in places like Libya and Syria and Yemen and Ukraine and all around the world.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Jim. We had the sense of that. I just wanted to we're in the interest of time here. Dave Anderson, do we know at this point how many Sanders supporters are going to back Trump versus Hillary?
Well, at this point, we know that, according to surveys at least 75% of Sanders supporters are now saying that they're going to back Clinton. There are some holdouts who are still refusing to endorse Clinton, and most of them are saying they're going to vote for a third-party candidate, either Gary Johnson or Jill Stein. There is a small segment who are saying they're going to back Trump. It is difficult for me to understand why that is, because a lot of the reasons why they don't like Hillary, when you look over at Trump, it just seems to get worse.
What about Jim's point there of being very concerned about what he called it, overseas activity by our military?
Sure, and a lot of people are concerned about that now, and Hillary Clinton, if anything, is probably more militaristic than Barack Obama is. But when you look at Donald Trump, he has said he is against a lot of the things that Obama and Secretary Clinton did while she was in office. He opposes that. But when you talk about what he wants to do in the future, he's talking about increasing the size of the American military, really exerting our military force abroad in very vague terms. He's referenced using nuclear weapons against our enemies. I can totally understand why people are leery about Hillary Clinton, particularly Bernie supporters, but I don't see how that follows with endorsing Donald Trump.
Okay. Let's spend a little time on Iowa's congressional races. We have one senatorial race, and, of course, every 2 years we have the House up for reelection. Let's talk a little bit about that. Chris Larimer, going through the districts, I'm not sure how much time we have. Let's hit some of the highlights here. What is the highlight district that you're looking at as perhaps an incumbent being knocked off, vulnerable?
Well, I think the one I'm in right now, the first congressional district in kind of the northeast quadrant of the state, this is a district where you have the Republican holds the seat. Republican Rod Blum is the incumbent, was first elected in 2014 in kind of a surprise because the district, if you look at party registration, Democrats tend to outnumber Republicans by about 4 percentage points. But 2014 was a midterm election year. And what we see in Iowa, which I don't think gets talked about enough, is the enormous turnout swings in Iowa. On average, between a midterm and a presidential election, there are about 450,000 more voters, about a 40% increase. And in a midterm year, you can have a Republican, like Rod Blum, win in a Democratic district if turnout isn't that high. But if you go back to 2012, this is a district that Barack Obama won by 13 points. So it is a Democratic district. The hard part is predicting turnout. The other part, the unique part of it, I think, is the number of voters registered as no party, because the first congressional district has the highest proportion of no party voters in the state. So, again, that's one of those things that makes it hard to predict. But if turnout's up, you would expect a Democrat to do well. And Rod Blum is being challenged by Monica Vernon from Cedar Rapids. And the first district, like so much of Iowa, is very politically imbalanced. You have 20 counties, but only three of them in Blackhawk, Dubuque, and Lynn make up over 50% of the general election voters probably for this particular district. So it's politically imbalanced. You have, in terms of where the voters are concentrated, it is a Democratic-leaning district, but we don't know turnout. And so I think it's going to be interesting to watch, because Rod Blum has been identified by roll call as the second most vulnerable incumbent across the entire country.
Okay, let's hear a little bit of the ad war in that first district race. Rod Blum, the incumbent, the Republican, versus Monica Vernon. The National Republican Campaign Committee has released an ad in support of Rod Blum that is very critical of his challenger.
You might want to sit down for this, because Monica Vernon's record is shocking. Iowans have been stunned to hear Vernon voted to increase property taxes and utility fees, bewildered that she wanted to raise the gas tax, and amazed that Vernon raised her own salary four times. Monica Vernon picked our pockets to pad her own, but we shouldn't be surprised, because that's Monica Vernon. The NRCC is responsible for the content of this advertising.
And just today, Democratic challenger Monica Vernon has released her own ad that takes a few swipes at Rod Blum.
Huh. Congressman Blum is a Tea Party member.
We've shut down the government before.
Blum voted to cut Social Security.
We've got to raise the retirement age.
Blum would raise the retirement age to 70. Then there's Monica Vernon, a hardworking mom. Started a small business while raising three daughters. She'll fight for equal pay, for equal work. Monica Vernon gets it.
I'm Monica Vernon, and I approve this message.
Okay, Chris Larimer, looking at the first district. Would you say that's where the incumbent is most vulnerable, or would you go to a different Iowa district?
No, I would say that it is the first district. I mean, Blum won this by 2 points in 2014, but as, you know, the ad by Vernon talked about, you know, he's a member of the Freedom Caucus, which is, you know, a very conservative part of the House Republican Caucus. And so I do see this as one, just, you know, based on the numbers at this point, that Blum, of all of Iowa's incumbent congressmen, is probably the most vulnerable.
Dave Anderson, what about the third district in the central part of the state and the southwest part of the state? David Young, the incumbent there, his first term up against Jim Maurer.
Yeah, that is the only other district that really could conceivably be competitive this cycle. It's about even between Democrats and Republicans there. David Young won in the last term and did pretty well, and it's conceivable that he could be challenged. He's running against Jim Maurer, who last time faced off against Steve King and got defeated pretty handily in the 4th Congressional District. And you could make a case that Maurer could be competitive, but recent polling is coming out saying that he's about 15 points down. He's got a really uphill battle. David Young seems to be very well liked in the district. David used to, I believe, be the chief of staff for Chuck Grassley. Mm-hmm. And if you know anything about Chuck Grassley, that is a man who can campaign in Iowa. And David, I think, has all those skills. He knows how to talk to Iowa voters.
The Democratic Party, very, very optimistic, I have to think, at one point for trying to tie the Republican members of Congress to Donald Trump in the hopes of regaining the majority in the U.S. House. Chris Larimer, that strategy, according to our polls, not having much of an effect here in Iowa?
No, I haven't seen a lot of evidence for that. I mean, if anything, we've seen further separation between how Donald Trump is polling in Iowa and how, for instance, Chuck Grassley is polling in Iowa. You're seeing about a 10, or even more point difference between Trump's numbers and Grassley's numbers, which at least would suggest.
And Trump is doing, but Trump is doing pretty well in Iowa. It's a toss-up here.
It's about a toss-up, but the latest numbers, you know, you have on Chuck Grassley's race is that it's close to a double-digit difference with Patty Judge, which suggests that voters are making distinctions. They are not throwing all Republicans in together and all Democrats in together, and so they are thinking about these races carefully. And you know, there was an interesting analysis in the Des Moines Register a few weeks ago by Jason Noble talking about the fact that Iowans are pretty consistent in terms of splitting their tickets. And so I would expect that to happen going forward. And I think trying to make that association with Trump is going to be a bit of a stretch.
Let's see. Any other items to mention, information on the congressional races? We have just a couple minutes left. Go ahead.
I would say, Dave, that both the Republicans and Democrats are still both figuring out how to deal with Donald Trump and the congressional calendar. I think Democrats have kind of been waiting until the September and October months to start launching a lot of TV ads trying to attach every Republican in the country to Donald Trump. And the Republicans have been kind of confused on what they want to do. They've been watching the polls, figuring out whether they want to run with their presidential candidate or run away from their presidential candidate. And I think they still haven't made up their mind. Recently, I think just yesterday, Mike Pence was in Washington talking to Republicans on the Hill, trying to bridge the gaps between the presidential campaign and the Senate and House campaigns. And it really didn't seem to go anywhere. It seems like Republicans who are currently in the House and Senate are very ambivalent about whether they want to connect themselves to the Trump campaign or whether they want a distance, and they're waiting to see. And that could turn out to be a big factor come November.
In the 2 or 3 minutes we have left, comment on this story breaking overnight. Newly released emails reportedly hacked, I guess, by the Russians or by a Russian hacker from former Secretary of State Colin Powell's account, showing him calling Donald Trump, in his words, national disgrace and international pariah. Also, though, in these hacked emails, reportedly criticizing Hillary Clinton's camp for trying to drag him into her email scandal, the security experts connecting these leaks to ongoing Russian and government cyber attack campaigns targeting U.S. political institutions and state offices. Comment as we close this hour, Chris, perhaps you first, the significance of these leaked emails from Secretary of State Colin Powell, Secretary of State under George W. Bush.
Well, I don't think the comments in themselves are all that surprising. I think most people would expect that Powell doesn't like Donald Trump and that he's probably frustrated by the way that the Hillary Clinton campaign has talked about him in terms of the back and forth on the emails. I think what's been interesting is that, at least so far, you know, we haven't heard any pushback from Trump on the comments that Powell made. In other words, you know, I think Colin Powell, if you would look at if they would do approval ratings, and I haven't seen anything on him lately, I think he's still very revered within the Republican Party, but really across parties with Democrats, independents, and Republicans. And so I think there's probably not going to be a lot of pushback from the Trump campaign. And I think it would be a mistake for them to do that, to try to start attacking Colin Powell for those comments. If they do, you know, I think that can hurt a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Dave Anderson?
Yeah, I think this is actually a great way to end the show, because we started off talking about Hillary Clinton's deplorable comment and what effect that's going to have. And I think the summary of that was that, well, it's a good thing to talk about, but it probably won't change many minds. And this feeds into that narrative perfectly, I think, because whatever you already believe about a presidential candidate, you will justify it through this email leak. You have people who don't like Donald Trump, and there is a trove of information in there where Colin Powell says he's unqualified, he's unfit to be commander-in-chief, he's a national disgrace. But if you don't like Hillary Clinton, Colin Powell also says in these emails he just personally does not like Hillary Clinton, and he doesn't think a lot of other people like working with Hillary Clinton. Will it change anybody's minds? I don't think so. I think this is just a very well-respected American who spoke his mind and feels very much like other Americans do.
Dave, will it provide any cover for Hillary Clinton in the email controversy she's been having? And I guess there's Colin Powell says he doesn't like trying to be dragged into the email controversy.
No, I don't think it provides her cover. I think it does the worst case scenario, which returns the email controversy to some front pages tomorrow morning. And this is an issue that Hillary Clinton has been trying to get rid of for almost 18 months, maybe 2 years now.
All right. We'll have a few more weeks to talk about this. We want to thank both of you for joining us. Dave Anderson, Assistant Professor of Political Science at Iowa State University in our Ames studio. Chris Larimer, Associate Professor of Political Science at University of Northern Iowa in Cedar Falls. Chris, Dave, thanks so much for coming by.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
A reminder that tomorrow on this program, I'll talk for half of the program with Jeffrey Toobin, staff writer for The New Yorker, also senior legal analyst for CNN. Tomorrow night, he'll be speaking in Iowa City. I'll talk with him tomorrow on this program about the Supreme Court. He's written a couple of very interesting bestsellers about the Supreme Court. River to River is produced by Claire Roth, Lindsay Moon, and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.